This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Well, it is windy as all get out right now, and that's as the front comes through. Right now, it's 53 degrees, feels like 41 with the wind. We have already reached our high temperature today, so temps will be falling throughout the day to eventually about 49 degrees, maybe 50, 49 degrees by sunset. Then tomorrow, highs of only 51 after a chilly start, likewise for New Year's Eve. New Year's Eve, New Year's Night, when you're either going out around maybe the fleur-de-lis drop or maybe shooting your own fireworks, whatever, it's going to be chilly. Then highs on New Year's Day of 66, 73 on Friday, 72 on the weekend, 50% chance for showers then, and then it cools off a little bit by the first week of January. Jeff Palermo joins us now, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director. How you doing, Jeff?
I am doing well. Tommy, how about yourself?
I was watching the game, and the most interesting part of the game on Saturday night to me was when Trinidad Chambliss's name came up with Lane Kiffin. Because if he had been drinking a beverage, it would have been a great time for a spit take. You know what I'm saying? Where it's like, so Lane, when it comes to Trinidad, what? Yeah. I can't talk about that. That was interesting, wasn't it?
It is, and there is a lot of uncertainty here involving Trinidad Chambliss, whether he's able to get an extra year of eligibility. Now, before he went to Ole Miss, he was at Ferris State. So that's Division II, that's NCAA. He only played two games, what would have been his, I guess, as it's right now referred to as his redshirt freshman season. And he's trying to say that because he had tonsillitis during that season, that what prevented him from playing more games. But apparently Ferris State is not really going along with that explanation. And he's kind of they were expecting Tom Mars, this is his attorney, who's you know, the guy to have when you're dealing with eligibility issues and you're a college athlete. But so far they have not been able to get that waiver from the NCAA. So when the transfer portal opens up on January 2nd, unless there is some sort of ruling that comes down here between now and New Year's Day, which is possible, but if there's not, I mean, I think Lane Kiffin and Billy Glasscock, the general manager for the LSU Tigers now, I think those guys are going to have to make a decision on a couple of other guys and go in that direction. I don't know if they can necessarily wait here on whether Trinidad's going to get that extra year of eligibility or not.
Is he going to play on Sunday?
He will play in the bowl game, yes.
No, I mean in the NFL I'm talking about.
Oh, on Sundays. Well, you know, that's a good question. I think one thing he would love to have is another year of development on the college level. You know, he performed well in Division II, but this was his first taste of playing in the, you know, FBS. And if you think about it, too, he wasn't even the starting quarterback in preseason camp for Ole Miss. So he, even during that time, he was taking a lot of the second string snaps, wasn't really working with the first team. Austin Simmons was the starting quarterback at the beginning of the year for the Rebels. So he was someone that wasn't even the main guy in preseason camp for Ole Miss. So I think he looks at it as he really could use another year of college football, whether that's at LSU, Ole Miss, somewhere else, whatever he decides to do. But he's still waiting on getting that extra year of eligibility. If not, then he's going to have to quickly pivot and get himself ready for the NFL draft.
And LSU is bound by, I guess, commitment of name, image, and likeness money. You got to know how much you have to spend before you decide whether to go after him or not, right? Because,
well, I mean, there's a lot of big time quarterbacks that's in this, you know, transfer portal. Sam Leavitt is one of those guys. Dylan Raiola, who's from Nebraska, I put it in my latest article at WWL.com, the figure that Stuart Mandel from The Athletic published, I think it was late last week, that, you know, to go out and get a starting quarterback, it's going to take about $4 to $6 million. So, you know, they have that money already allocated, whether that's going to be for Trinidad Chambliss or another one of these other guys that have entered a transfer portal. They're certainly going to go after it. And, you know, Michael Van Buren is an option as well. Does, you know, it's hard to say, but, you know, does Lane and this coaching staff think that he's the answer? You know, he was talking about during that same interview that you were alluding to at the mm-hmm. beginning of this interview about how he was, you know, having a conversation with Charlie Weiss, the offensive coordinator, about transfer quarterbacks. So I think they're looking – well, they got to get more because at this point, Van Buren is the only scholarship quarterback player on the roster, and they don't have an incoming player as incoming quarterback coming in from the high school ranks. So they're going to have to go in the transfer portal and get at least a couple of guys to give you a little bit of depth at that position.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back talking to Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist, about the LSU Tigers' weird bowl game, because although it was an entertaining game, LSU lost, but really with the opt-outs with Frank Wilson, who's leaving to go to Ole Miss, it was just a weird kind of deal. 7:21 traffic now, WWL. 7:26, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking Jeff Palermo, WWL.com, columnist, Louisiana Network News Director. So the Lane Kiffin era officially begins. How much of a surprise was it that Frank Wilson is going to Ole Miss?
Well, you know, when you have a coaching change, you never know what's going to happen, Tommy. I mean, it's tough to say, you know, and the two have worked together before. So you were thinking maybe there might be a chance. Mm-hmm. But the other thing about it is that Lane has something going on here with as far as there's a good relationship with all of his offensive coaches. I think he really believes in his running backs coach that he's bringing with him to Ole Miss. So when you heard that, once they announced or once it seemed like Lane – Kiffin was, in fact, going to be the next head coach of LSU, and you heard that he was going to bring most, if not all, of his offensive coaches with him. You were wondering, well, what does that mean for Frank Wilson? Frank Wilson's a guy that wants to still be, you know, coaching on the field. He could have maybe become an analyst or maybe a personnel guy, but he feels like he wants to be there with the guy, as the running backs coach. And there just really wasn't a spot for him. I think they did look at – well, I think they both mentioned they looked at different options for those two guys as far as trying to figure out where maybe there could be a spot for Frank Wilson. Maybe, I don't know, maybe make him a special teams coordinator or mm-hmm. something like that. But it just didn't work out. So
any take – I'm
sorry. Move on, and who knows? Maybe there might be a day down the road where Frank's back at LSU.
Any takeaways from the game on Saturday night that really have anything to do with next year?
Well, I think to me, and I talked about it in my preview piece going into the game, you know, there were some guys on defense that you were, you know, hoping to, you know, really see play well. You know, Tylan Singleton, Devon Keys, you know, guys in the secondary, DJ Pickett, who got picked on quite a bit in that game. And I think he'll be better for it, actually, in the end. But there's all this talk about the offense and getting a quarterback and maybe getting another running back. And obviously they got to rebuild the entire offensive line, it looks like. But there's a lot of work on defense, too. There's a ton of work that still needs to be done. I mean, Lane talked about how it was a priority to make sure that Whit Weeks comes back next season. So I'm sure that's one of the things they're going to probably try to secure here, but they're going to need some playmakers on the defensive side of the football. I mean, they went into that game without six starters, and there was an opportunity in that game for some guys to step up, and frankly, you just didn't see it. So a lot of work to go over there. It's just not going to be the offense. So it'll be fascinating to see starting on Friday, Tommy. I mean, who they end up getting out of the transfer portal.
That was my next question.
They've identified several guys at this moment.
That was my next question. Give me the chronology of what we can look for as far as the Lane Kiffin LSU era.
Well, it really begins January 2nd, because that's when Lane can really start to do some really make some moves here, is trying to get this roster to where it can compete to play in the college football playoff next season. I mean, he got into the high school recruiting cycle very, very late there, and to try to shore that up. But I have a feeling this is gonna act a lot like what you see with NBA free agency and the NFL free agency. Even though that portal window opens up on January 2nd, guys are going to be committing to schools right away. Deals are already in place. All these players have agents. Coaches are able to talk with the agents. So you can get a lot of these deals, NIL deals, in place. And then by January 2nd and 3rd, I think you're going to hear a flurry of commitments coming to LSU, and obviously other schools as well. But LSU is going to be as aggressive as anyone out there as far as trying to load up on their roster with transfer players.
This is going to be fun. Happy New Year. Thank you, Jeff.
All right, Tommy.
Appreciate
it
as always. You bet. Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist. Soon come back. It's going to be Bank On It, financial insight you can count on with Jason Shields, the COO of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. We're going to talk about why what's happening in Japan actually matters for U.S. interest rates. Intrigued? I am. We'll find out. We come back right now. Time for WWL First News. 7:45, quarter till 8, Monday morning, December 29th. That means it's time for Bank On It, financial insights you can count on with Jason Shields, the COO of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. How you doing, Jason?
Doing good, Tommy. How are you today?
I am all right, sir. I'm intrigued as to why what's happening in Japan actually matters for U.S. interest rates.
Yeah, so I thought for the last show of the year we would do an interesting topic that's actually somewhat important right now because of some things that are happening in Japan, but it's probably something that not a lot of people realize. Mm-hmm. So for years, Japan has had some of the lowest interest rates in the world, almost zero for decades. And at the same time, the U.S. here, we offered higher yields on things like government bonds and things. And so what that did was that actually created a real powerful incentive for global investors, and one that Japan has slowly started to move away from, that ultra low rate world. And that's why it sort of matters with what's going on today. So mm-hmm. There's a thing that's called the yen carry trade, talked about in economics, and it's a complicated sounding thing, but the idea behind it's incredibly simple. So if you're an investor, you would borrow that cheap money in Japan in yen, right? And then you would use it to buy higher yielding assets, say U.S. Treasuries. And what will happen is the spread on that, you're able to basically make free money because Treasuries have low risk, the yen is lower. And as long as you manage that margin and you make sure that you keep up on the currency, it's incredibly low risk earning assets. And what that did, that pumped a whole lot of money into treasury purchases here in the U.S., right? Because people saw that as an easy way to do safe trades that made them a good bit of money. And, you know, as we've talked about in the past, the treasuries are our issuance that allows us to continue to fund here. Mm-hmm. Now, what you could imagine is if Japan was to change their rates and tighten those margins, it could have some impacts on the issuance of those bonds. Are less people buying treasuries? And so why is Japan so low? And Japan's actually fascinating. If anyone's bored over the New Year holiday, go read up on the 1980s Japan crash, because in the 1980s, Japan had one of the biggest asset bubbles in history. And to this day, economist.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here, wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So, that means a half day, yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
You know how everything's a subscription now? Music, movies, even socks. I swear if I...
To continue this ad, please upgrade to Premium Plus Platinum.
What? No, anyway, Blue Apron...
This is a pay-per-listen ad. Please confirm your billing.
Oh, that's annoying. At least with the new Blue Apron, there's no subscription needed. Get delicious meals delivered without the weekly plan.
Wait, no subscription?
Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
And financial people study it to understand exactly what happened. But basically, their asset bubble in the 80s was one of the biggest we'd ever seen in the world. There's the stat that people like to throw around, economists, that say the land at the peak, the land underneath Tokyo's Imperial Palace, was valued at more than all of the real estate in California combined. So, you know, it doesn't take a genius to realize that that's a little bit out of whack. But that shows you how extreme it was. And when that bubble burst, Japan spent decades at zero interest rates. They actually went negative for a little bit. And while that sounds like a horrible thing, what it did is it allowed investors to inject cash and use it to buy U.S. bonds. And this is something that we've been doing forever. So what does all that mean, right? Right now, Japan recently just raised their rates again to 75%, 75 bips. And what that's done is that's tightened that margin that's out there. Now, it's not a problem, but it is an interesting thing because now that a couple of things could happen here. The yen could get stronger, the cost of borrowing gets stronger, and all of a sudden, all of that cheap money that we used over the years, big institutional borrowers. I'm not talking about you and me. I'm talking about giant banks that would borrow $100 million at a time to buy treasuries. All of a sudden, that trade doesn't make as much sense. And it's not an alarming thing, but it is an intriguing thing from an economic standpoint, because I like to use the example of free shipping, Tommy, right? Like over the holidays, we've all taken it for granted at this point, right? You go to checkout, boom, free shipping, you make the order, no problem. But if you're like me, you go to check out and all of a sudden you're getting hit with shipping charges. Mm-hmm. Start to second guess that purchase a little bit, right? Because you're like, okay, well, this doesn't feel as if I'm still getting as good of a deal as I was getting before. And that's what's going to slowly start happening here with the yen carry trade, right? Institutional investors are going to say, okay, this used to really make a whole lot of sense for me. I use this as a method of buying treasuries. And it's not an alarming thing, but it is a trend that we're noticing that if the lowest rates in the world have decided that they want to start ticking up, it probably means those 0% rate days are probably behind us. And it's a good thing from an economic standpoint, but it's an interesting thing that you have to balance, because what happens in Japan does actually affect here. Because if people stop buying treasuries via this trade, now they'll still buy them. But if demand slows, that'll raise yields, and those raised yields could, because you're going to have to pay more on those treasuries for people to want to buy them, that directly impacts mortgage rates. That directly impacts everything. And so I don't want to be an alarmist here, Tommy. I don't want to make everyone think, oh, God, the mortgage rates are going to go up. You're talking about they raised it by 25 basis points. Not a huge number, but the trend shows us those 0% rates in the 2010s, they're starting to fade away. It's an interesting thing. I encourage everyone, if they're interested in it, to go look up the yen carry trade, or perhaps go look at the 1980s Japanese crash, because it's interesting. And it shows that I think a lot of the lessons we learned from that crash helped us during COVID, right? What happens in a time where your economy basically screeches to a halt, and how quickly you react? Japan took a much more longer approach. They took a longer runway in how they handled the 1980s crash. And we saw that it took decades to recover. The U.S. during COVID, we injected money and we told the economy to get going. And you know, look, that's one of those moments where when you get it right, nobody cares. But if we would have got it wrong, we could be sitting in a 30-year slump like Japan. So interesting stuff. That was a fun topic that we would go over.
So I'm trying to figure out what was in it for Japan if they had zero interest and people were buying U.S. treasuries? What am I missing here?
Yeah. So look, Japan had the theory has always been, if you bring rates to zero, Tommy, everybody's going to borrow money and they're going to go use it and do stuff. Mm-hmm. But what happened in Japan is their banks had so much bad debt. Their their population had so it hit them so hard. The people of Japan became incredibly debt averse, right? And so, like in America, if I gave you 0% interest rates, free shipping, you know, 2% mortgages, we're going to go out and buy stuff, right? That's what we do. But in Japan, culturally, this hit them so hard, it generationally ruined what people were doing. So Japan just tried everything they could. And what happened was they kept their rates at zero so long, the people of Japan kind of normalized it. Mm-hmm. And what happened was that they just had to keep it there because there was literally no more dry powder that they could do anything with. You can make rates go negative, and they did. Mm-hmm. But in essence, they were just kind of held up by foreign people coming and borrowing that money to do stuff. Now, they were still getting paid on that debt. So if you're a bank in Japan, you're still making money on it. But you can't really raise rates. Raising rates destimulates the economy. Right? They just want to stop spending. And so Japan had to wait for wages and, you know, asset growth to go up before they could start raising rates. They're just starting to see that. So that's, I don't know if that completely explained it for you or not. But
well, no, it does. And when it comes to with our own personal finances, is there anything we can really do as it relates to this?
Yeah, no, everyone asks me, when are we going to get 3% mortgages again, Tommy? I don't see it happening for a while, not the way that things are going. Mortgages are the most popular one that everyone asks about. I always like to say, love the house, live with the rate. You'll eventually get a rate that you like, and you can always refinance out of it. Mm-hmm. But if you're sitting there on the fence and saying, I'm not going to buy a house until I get that 3% mortgage rate, it's probably not going to happen, right? These things like Japan making these moves and some other things that we're seeing globally, not just locally, are indicating at this point that the 0% interest rate days are gone. And so we're a pretty good normalization of the market, but we'll be steady for a while. And I think that's the important takeaway from this.
Very interesting. Thank you, sir. Interesting and informative as always. Jason Shields, Chief Operating Officer for Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Bank on it. Financial insights you can count on. 7:54 and a half. Time for traffic. WWL.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.